Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. It's Monday and we're always happy to be here on Mondays. Get this thing going again, start having fun again. But it's particularly happy Monday around here today because, well, Assistant Producer Marie is not here. And we're not happy because she's not here. We're happy for the reason she's not here. She changed her last name. She got married. She did it on Saturday. They were able to get married at the Byzantine Catholic Church here in San Diego, Assistant Producer Marie and David Bates. And we congratulate them. We're so happy for them. We saw a couple pictures of it. They were going to live stream it for friends and family, but I guess there was a problem with that. But we saw photos. Did you guys see the photos? Beautiful, right? Yeah, it's a beautiful church. Oh, no, Marie looked good too. But no, I mean, it was a beautiful looking wedding. It did not look like a lot of people there, though, because it's COVID time. But thanks to everybody who's been praying for Marie and David, everybody who's been rooting for them. They are married now, and we're so happy for them. And we have on the phones Emily. And Emily comes from on high. She is the executive assistant to the president here at Catholic Answers, and she had to come down, 43 staircases to get here to the low levels of Catholic Answers Radio. So she's going to be taking your calls today. 888-318-7884 is the number. It's a very serious topic today, so try to be nice to Emily. The topic is, why are you pro-choice? We open up the phone lines both hours to pro-choice people only. If you're a pro-choice person, whether you're Catholic or not, anybody, if you want to defend the pro-choice position, you're welcome to call 888-318-7884. And pro-choice means if at any stage in human life you think it's okay to take that life, or I guess I shouldn't say it that way, because some people will say, well, it's not a human life. I don't want to put words into your mouth. So even though, things like science would, but if you say, well, you know, I don't believe in abortion, for example, except first 3 months, well, then you're a pro-choice person. You believe people should have the choice commit abortion up to the first 3 months of the child's life. Maybe you're a person who doesn't believe in abortion at all, but you believe in suicide. You believe that people should be allowed to take their own lives in certain circumstances or in any circumstance. That makes you a pro-choice person. So why are you pro-choice? That's what we want to know. And I know you want to tell us, or at least many do, because we always have very, very powerful conversations on these days and pro-choice people. We're grateful that there are pro-choice people who are willing to call up and have these conversations with us. I kind of think this is never going to happen on CNN. They're never going to have a day where you openly get to talk about the most important issue in our society. It's never going to happen on Fox News. It's never going to happen on PBS or ABC or NBC, but we do it here because we're willing to tackle the hard stuff, the really hard stuff. In order to engage in these conversations, you don't want to have a conversation about these things with me. I'm not. I'm going to sit here going a lot. So we needed to bring in the big guy, the guy who knows this stuff, who's been actually engaging in pro-life apologetics for most of his adult life, probably all of his adult life. He wrote a book called Persuasive Pro-Life. He also wrote a book called Why We're Catholic. It's Trent Horn, apologist here at Catholic Answers, author extraordinaire, and someone who, frankly, I have never said a bad word about. Hello, Trent Horn.
Sigh. I have been waiting to chime in. There are so many points where I wanted to join in with what you were saying, but I always feel that it's weird when the guest interjects before you've had a chance to introduce them.
That's why I didn't introduce you, because I just wanted to have it all to myself.
You got to have it all to yourself.
I did, yeah.
I mean, I had a joke ready.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, for what brings us together today without Marie? It's marriage. Marriage brings us together today without Marie. That is wonderful. Yeah, the marriage in the Eastern Rite of the Church, in the Byzantine Rite, is very beautiful. They do the crowning, where the crowns are placed on their heads to symbolize that they share in Christ's royal priesthood. And it's something that the church imparts to them as part of being essentially the king and queen of their little domestic church.
Yeah.
That it's like a little Catholic kingdom, if you will. So I love it.
Yeah,
it's great.
It's great and it's beautiful. Do you go to Mass there sometimes, or at least part of your life is at the Byzantine?
Oh yeah, no? My wife and I, we celebrate at the Divine Liturgy. We're still part of the Latin Rite of the Church. That's what I was baptized in. My wife was baptized in. But you can attend any Catholic parish, regardless of what rite it happens to be, and receive the sacraments there as long as you're baptized. So you could attend Latin Rite parish, you could attend a Maronite, Chaldean, Byzantine, Syro-Malabar. The Catholic Church is rich and varied in the ways it celebrates the mysteries of the faith.
I like the ones with pews, though. The church with pews.
We do not have pews.
In the Byzantine, right?
Well, in our particular Byzantine church, many, including in the Eastern Orthodox, still have this as well. But we emulate, at our parish, we emulate the tradition of the church prior to the 16th century, which is to not have pews. Are something that were invented in Protestant churches for people who had to sit and listen to very long sermons.
Yeah. Yeah. This is one of the things the Protestants got right, I think. Father Hugh says, no Catholic church should have pews. Everyone should stand for Mass.
And here's what's fun
about
that.
In the
Eastern church side, the posture for reverence is not kneeling. It is standing, actually. That when you stand, you are signifying you have someone else in authority over you. And so that the person who is sitting and addressing you, like if we think about Jesus, the master rabbi, when he sits down, he's teaching you. If you sit down, you don't have anything to say to him. He has something to say to you. So to stand, it's a bit counterintuitive. When you think of it more, it's like, it means I wait to receive that which I'm under authority to. But of course, kneeling also has its proper posture as well. That goes back centuries as a posture of reverence. So whatever it is, as long as it is reverent within this particular tradition, it's all good in my book.
888-3187-884, the number. We move on to the business of the day because it is very serious business, and there are lots and lots of folks who are willing to have this conversation with us. We're very grateful for them. If you are a pro-life person, wait for another day, please. This is entirely dedicated to pro-choice people so that we can engage in conversations with pro-choice folks. 888-3187-884. I usually have a story that I start out or a question that I start out to ask Trent. And today I decided to go with a suicide story because it's one that this is a life issue. This is a fundamental life issue. It is certainly related to the abortive mentality. And so I wanted to ask you about this. In Netherlands now, there's a proposal for a new law in which if you are over 75, you can choose suicide for. And I'm going to leave this as a quiz question for you. What reason do you think that they're proposing? You can choose suicide over 75 if you are...
I'm just going to pick all of the above.
Exactly. That's it. It's called tired of living. If you're over 75, if you're 74, so I guess, and you're tired of living,
It's essentially a permanent retirement option.
You just
want to retire from life.
It's everybody gets an exit.
So here's what's interesting to me. So what they would say is that, and I haven't read into this law more carefully, but what I would wonder is, what is the justification behind this? The justification would seem to be that someone who has reached the age of 75, that there is no good reason for them to continue living.
I don't think that this is based on reason.
Of course,
I think,
it's not based on reason. But what are the consequences of a law like this? For example, there would be no way. Imagine someone was jumping off a bridge in the Netherlands. I don't know if they have high enough bridges in the Netherlands for someone to jump off.
It is called the Low Countries,
right? So I don't know if the bridges are high enough that people do that. But suppose someone were to go and take their own life. Normally, Si, when someone tries to take their own life, we go and we stop them from doing that.
Yeah, but are you allowed to stop a 75-year-old now? I don't know.
Because here's the thing. If a 75-year-old in the Netherlands could end their own life through a medical procedure for no reason at all, any reason or no reason,
right?
Then what if someone, were just to take their own life and you find out, I just turned 75 yesterday. Well, never mind. Be on your way.
Yeah.
And then I would say, why do you draw the line there? Why do you draw the line at that age? Now, the retort may be, someone at the age of 75... they may not have that many years left anyways, and life can be very difficult and cumbersome at that age. But then there are two replies to that. First, there are many healthy 75-year-olds who could continue to live for decades, actually.
Yeah.
And they could have a rich, fulfilling life in front of them. That the logic that we would use to talk a 40-year-old out of suicide would also apply to them.
Sure. Right.
And number two, there are many people under the age of 75 who may not have that long to live or may have cumbersome lives, then why not just open it up to them as well? Why set an age limit at all?
Well, I think this is what, in the Netherlands...
No, I'm not endorsing this. I'm just saying it doesn't make any sense.
No, you're saying that... Right. But I think the reasoning in the Netherlands goes like this. In 2003, they passed euthanasia laws that lives could be taken if they were confronting unbearable suffering. And the reason you set a line like that, unbearable suffering, is so that a few years later you can come in and undermine it, because it doesn't actually make any sense. There is no reason why you would say this and not that when it comes to killing people. Mm-hmm. And so the plan is, I do believe that this movement, this suicide movement, the end of it is anybody at any time
right.
can say, I want to get out of here. And I'm sure some of this goes along with an environmentalist view that says humans are a cancer on the planet or a virus infecting the planet. Some of it just goes along with an right. extreme individualist view that, mm-hmm. hey, if you want to take your life, take your life. Who am I to stop you? That we just totally deny the communal consequences of any of these things. And there are tremendous communal consequences.
It's very sad that people think that the best way to care for those who are suffering in life is to simply eliminate the person. Compassion yeah. means to suffer, compassion means to suffer alongside that person. It's easy to give somebody pills so that they end their own life, kill themselves.
Right, and cheaper.
Anybody can do that. And you're right, it is cheaper than it is to provide palliative care, comfort care, and the real presence of Christ among people to show them that the fact that their lives, especially if they are older and become dependent on others, they require more care from us, not less.
Right, right. 888-318-7884 is the number. If you are a pro-choice person, the entire show is for you today. Whether you are pro-choice in regards to euthanasia or suicide, or in the way that is more commonly understood, pro-choice in reference to abortion at any stage, even if you say, well, I'm only for abortion during the first day of pregnancy. Well, that still makes you a pro-choice person, and we'd love to have a conversation with you about it. 888-318-7884, the number. We're looking forward to conversations with you on the issue of life right after this.
Hang on. We'll be right back with more Catholic Answers Live.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite Monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Looking for a 2020 view on how Catholics are voting in the upcoming election? EWTN News and Real Clear Opinion Research are partnering to bring you clear and concise data on where the nation stands on issues, candidates, policies, and more by surveying Americans, including Catholics like you. And it's available now at EWTNnews.com/poll.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live, some of the most challenging shows we do, with certainly some of the most interesting conversations, sometimes painful conversations, but always, I think, riveting and helpful conversations. But we talk about the positions, the pro-life and pro-choice positions. We only have two lines open right now, so we're grateful for those pro-choice people who call and have the conversation with us, 888-318-7884. As I said before, I'm proud that we do these shows. I don't think that you will find open, honest conversation where everyone gets to make their points about the pro-life or pro-choice issue, about the issues of suicide, euthanasia, and abortion anywhere else in Catholic media. I don't know anywhere else where these conversations are happening, and they are the most important conversations for us to have. 888-318-7884, our number. Trent Horn, as I said, is our guest both hours today on Catholic Answers Live. Trent wrote a book called Persuasive Pro-Life. He and I are both pro-life people, me primarily for emotional reasons, him because he understands it all and has figured it all out. Roughly speaking, you figured it all out. You could explain it.
Something in there. I'm maybe thinking even I'll start my own TV show, Trent Explains It All.
Trent Explains It All, yes. All right.
So
I feel that my life is safe in your hands today, Trent.
The title may have been stolen by somebody else a while ago, so we'll have to...
Let's go to Daniel in Des Moines, Iowa, listening on 1150 AM, our first pro-choice caller. We're grateful for your call, Daniel. Why are you pro-choice?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I'm pro-choice because our laws are not adequately protecting a woman's right to choose life, and therefore they need to let her be able to choose abortion.
What do you mean, Daniel, when you say our laws are not adequate to protect a woman's right to choose life? Because when I hear the right to choose life, that just means the right to give birth and not have an abortion. So how do the laws not protect a woman's right to not have an abortion? I don't quite understand.
The evidence for that is the fact that studies are showing that homicide is the leading cause of death for unwed pregnant women, whereas homicide ranks way low on the list, like 17th for everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
So our homicide laws are not actually doing enough to protect a woman's right to choose life.
So an additional
law would be needed in order to protect that particular right.
Daniel, I don't understand. It's okay. So it seems like your reasoning is because pregnant women are likely to be victims of homicide, because pregnant women are more likely to be murdered, therefore pregnant women should be allowed to murder their unborn children. I'm not following it here.
I'm kind of taking it from the angle of the state, the government, the laws. The laws are not actually protecting her right to choose life because it's a lot of times it's dangerous for her to choose life.
How is it? Okay, so you're telling me that if these women just got abortions, they would not have been murdered?
Yeah, correct. I've actually studied this a lot, and I'm seeing that's clearly the motive. That the man wants to get out of having to pay child support, so he'll actually kill her.
Why don't we just concentrate our efforts on the man who is trying to kill the woman and child instead of trying to help him kill the child? So your solution is, instead of focusing our law enforcement on the murderer, we should cooperate with the murderer and help him kill the child?
Oh, no, not at all. What you would do is you would pass an additional law that, besides the homicide law, one that would require a man to pay in one of two ways for impregnating a woman illegitimately, regardless of what the woman chooses. And that would actually take away the motive for him to threaten her to get an abortion.
Oh, what are you saying? Well, we already have child support laws in the United States.
Right. But abortion gets him out of having to pay child support. That's the problem there. That gives him a motive to threaten her to get an abortion.
Okay. So instead of making it legal for the mother to abort, we can just say that he has obligations to the mother, regardless what happens. But I wanted to entertain your question, Daniel, because it did seem interesting to me. Though at the end of the day, it just seems to employ a morally perverse kind of logic behind it. So you and I agree the murder of pregnant women is wrong and should be illegal. Why should it be illegal to kill a pregnant woman?
Because she's made in the image of God.
Okay, so then the natural question is a unborn human being made in the image of God? What would your answer to that question be?
Yes.
So then logically it would follow it should be illegal to kill that unborn human being too.
Yeah, that's right. Ultimately, that's what we would want. But for now, until we actually take away the murder motive of the man, unless the law actually takes away that murder motive, it has to let her, give her that option of choosing an abortion, even though, you know, you and I know that kills a child.
So we have to cooperate with the murderer because we aren't always effective at stopping him. I'm just going to vociferously disagree. I would say that is a heinous and cruel kind of solution. where there are many other ways that we can address these issues, but the fundamental issue we have to address is this: is the unborn a human being or not? Otherwise, you could justify all kinds of other crimes like robbery or terrorism because the person who wants to commit the crime is fully committed to do so. It just wouldn't make sense to me to not treat the unborn as a human being, to say that we do value them as a human being, but because there are a few people that will still try to commit homicide, we are going to cooperate with them in some way in order to reduce the consequences of their bad actions. That, I'm just going to say, I'm not going to ever cooperate with murderers in that regard. But I'm grateful you called in, Daniel, and I hope you'll call in at another time to continue a discussion.
Thanks, Daniel. It's open forum. Well, no, it's actually, we're asking, why are you pro-choice? I was going to say open forum for pro-choice people, but it really is. I mean, if you're a pro-choice person, we want your call. We want to have that conversation with you. 888-318-7884 is the number. 888-318-7884. I almost wanted to ask Daniel if there's some times when you want to draw attention to an evil by taking an exaggerated position, and it really is an evil that pregnant women are often the locus of abuse and even killing by spouse or partner.
Sure.
And I almost think, well, you take a kind of ridiculous position to draw attention to that. I just wonder if Daniel's engaging in a little bit of that, and maybe he should be a little more careful in doing that because he's advocating the killing of children to make his point.
There is a place for Swiftian satire.
Sure. Yeah. Like a solution to the Irish problem,
which would be, why not just have them boil their own children and then they won't go hungry, which of course Swift didn't really mean that. It was to point out the social plight of the Irish at that time.
Right. That's how Daniel's argument almost sounded to me.
Almost. I'm not sure. Sometimes it can be hard to tease without a winking face behind it. Sometimes it's hard to tell the difference between parody and absurdity.
Right.
So, but what I can just take from that, however, I have heard this before, Cy, in other respects, where people will say, well, women are still going to get abortions anyway, so might as well make it safe for them to do so, even if it is a baby. And I'll say, no, we don't do that because we don't make other inevitable crimes safer for the people involved. It's like saying, well, rape is going to happen anyways, but if we made rape legal, maybe the rapist won't murder his victim because he's worried he's going to get caught. But if legal, he won't do that. In fact, that would be the closest parallel to what Daniel was saying. You know, hey, you'll mitigate harm. There'll be at least less murders, even if there's more rapes. And we'd say, no, it's not a choice we have to make. We're just going to protect women, and we're going to do our best to apply the enforcement to the law as adequately and justly and necessarily as needs to be.
Again, Daniel, thanks for the call. It's why are you pro-choice today? John in San Angelo, Texas, is on next. John, thank you so much for your call. Why are you pro-choice?
Well, I just called in, and guess there's not too many people calling in. Just got on. Why am I pro-choice? Because, to be honest, they're just, you know, I mean, when a lady is pregnant and it's not a living thing until it's actually out of the mother's womb. Mm-hmm. To be honest.
Okay. Well, John, let me ask you this question: if a pregnant woman, if the fetus is not a living thing within a pregnant woman, why do you need abortion at all? It's not alive, so you don't need to kill it.
Well, under your explanation of alive is, yes, it needs nutrients to grow. Mm. Correct. I mean, would you say a virus is living? No, it's not. It grows.
For biologists, virus is sort of a gray category of growth because a virus doesn't grow by cellular reproduction. It hijacks cells and creates genetic copies of itself that then, you know, go out from it. But if you look at things, if the definition of life, if something is living, if it takes in food and nutrients and grows by cellular reproduction, under that definition of life, an unborn embryo or fetus is clearly biologically alive in that case. Would you agree with that definition?
Sure. Let's go.
Okay. But I agree with you that not everything that's alive has human rights. I mean, slugs are alive, bacteria are alive. We kill those things all the time. But I do think there's certain kinds of living things we don't kill. We got to figure out what those things are. And for me, they would be human living things. So if you are growing by cellular reproduction, you are a whole organism that is developing. You're not a mere, you're not a body part. You're a whole organism that is growing and developing. And you have human parents and human DNA. Well, then I would say you're a biological human being under that definition. Would you offer a contrary definition, or what would you think?
Sorry, I didn't hear half of that.
Hold on. Let me just re-summarize it, John. A human being is an individual member of the human species. If you're an organism that is developing and you have human parents and human DNA, you would be a human being.
Correct. Yes.
Okay. Would that definition apply to a human embryo or a human fetus?
It's an embryo. It's not a human being.
Well, why don't we pick this up then across the break then? Because that's an interesting objection you've raised. Would you be willing to do that?
Sure.
Okay, great.
Thanks, John. Why are you pro-choice? Our topic today, folks coming and going, but a couple lines remain open. You're welcome to call 888-318-7884. Why are you pro-choice?
Your number one source for Catholic apologetics and evangelization, Catholic Answers Live.
Have you subscribed to the Catholic Answers Radio Club newsletter? This is Catholic Answers Live host Cy Kellett, and I want to tell you about our new weekly newsletter full of behind-the-scenes information and facts you need to know about the show. It's easy to sign up. Just visit CatholicAnswersLive.com and look for the newsletter sign-up box on the front of the page. It's a great way to keep up to date with what's happening with the show and see what's coming in the days ahead, delivered weekly into your inbox. Sign up today for the Catholic Answers Radio Club newsletter and see what you've been missing. Go to CatholicAnswersLive.com.
What are miracles, and why does God work them? How can I believe in miracles if I've never experienced one? Aren't miracles just something pre-scientific people made up to explain what they couldn't understand? 20 Answers Miracles unpacks the nature of miracles, their appearances in Scripture and history, how the Church evaluates them, and ways to answer doubters who say they're mere superstition. 20 Answers Miracles is part of the 20 Answers series from Catholic Answers, offering hard facts, powerful arguments, and clear explanations of the most important topics facing the Church and the world, all in a compact, easy-to-read package. Visit shop.catholic.com today and take a look at this exciting new series from Catholic Answers Press.
If you're a Catholic who sometimes gets intimidated by the Bible, Jimmy Akin's The Bible is a Catholic Book will help you better understand and take pride in this gift that God gave the world through the Church. Don't let anyone tell you otherwise. Catholics are the original Bible Christians. Order your copy of The Bible is a Catholic Book today by calling 844-239-4952, by visiting shop.catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
I'm Gloria Purvis.
I'm Monsignor Charles Pope.
And I'm Deacon Harold. The Morning Glory team asks, what happened to the Boy Scouts?
Tomorrow morning, 7 Eastern. Now back to Catholic Answers Live.
Are the Boy Scouts lost? What happened to them? I guess, but like everything, every other institution in our society, the pressures of various institutions. I'll be interested to hear that. I wonder what did happen to the Boy Scouts. Our number here is 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. The topic, why are you pro-choice? Where we hold the lines for pro-choice people. If you are a pro-choice person, if you believe in abortion at any stage, or you believe in suicide or euthanasia, you are a pro-choice person, and you are welcome to call 888-318-7884. John in San Angelo, Texas, just caught us on the air, decided to give us a call, and says he's pro-choice, Trent, because until a child is born, it's not a living thing.
Yes, in our conversation, John made a distinction between a human being and an embryo. Before we went to the break, John, you said that there's a difference between being an embryo and being a human being. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, we could go on this all day, but the whole idea is that, you know, an embryo, if you take an embryo out, it's gone within a couple of seconds.
Well, hold on, John. I want to go back to this because this is a very crucial point. What is an embryo? A human embryo? What is it?
An embryo is basically, it's part of the developmental stage of any type of organism before it's actually living in an actual, you know, out in the environment. Basically, I don't know too much about the developmental processes of any type of biological organism, but I understand the embryo is part of the early stages of development.
Sure.
Correct. So it's not, my understanding of a living organism is that it needs to be breathing air, it can consume food, it, it basically can live on its own, you know, without, you know, having to be inside of somebody's womb.
For something to be a living being or a living thing?
A living thing. But, and, you know, I, the whole reason I called in, to be honest, was I don't want to get sidetracked, is that I've never heard the idea of being lumped into suicide as being a pro-choice advocate, and I don't agree with suicide, but I don't agree with the lumping in of abortion and suicide. It brings in a bad connotation to the pro-choice era.
Well, that's interesting, John, because I think a lot of people who support the right to have an abortion also support things like the right to engage in assisted suicide, for example, that they'd say just as a woman has autonomy over her body. In fact, for many people, who would balk at abortion because it involves another living thing, they would say, well, suicide only involves yourself. So the way that pro-life is connected, how people define it, like I define it as the respecting the right to life of all human beings, born and unborn. And I do believe laws that allow for suicide, legalizing suicide, do not protect the lives of born people. But for me, though, I really do want to talk about this issue involving whether an embryo is a human being or not, because that really is like, I mean, that's really the crux of the issue right there. And your concern, what you said is, and I would agree with you on two out of the three points, for something to be living, it has to be growing, it has to be taking in food, but it doesn't have to be outside of another being's body. I mean, a parasite, for example, a tapeworm or bacteria, they're living beings inside of my body. But I can kill them not in virtue of the fact that they live in my body, but because they're not human. They're not human beings. But I would say for a human embryo, they are alive, they're growing. It's the earliest stage of the life of that human being. I just don't see the moral relevance of the fact that this human being lives in his mother's body instead of outside near his mother's body. I just don't see the location of the child changing his value. What do you think of that?
Well, that's the idea. Is the whole conversation is, when is it become an actual living thing? I get it, you know, within 8.5 months of a pregnancy, that's straight up murder, you know, but the whole idea is these laws are in place to protect the women that are vulnerable, that are 16, that did not have a choice, that literally were raped, and their whole life is ruined because they have this unborn child in front of them. And the father is completely out of the picture, is, you know, and what are they supposed to do?
But, right.
Just down or put it into the system and put them back into, you know, foster care? I mean, is that a way that you want, you know, these children to live?
But, or do you, okay, sure. John, let me jump in here because we're losing your audio a little bit. Hopefully, maybe we could bring it back one more time and see if it improves. But what I would say is that your reasoning there is interesting, that if it's just about whether the unborn is not a living being, it doesn't matter the motivation of the woman who chooses abortion. If she just wants to go to Europe for 3 months and she doesn't want to be pregnant anymore, if it's not a living being, who cares? So we don't actually need to appeal to these very difficult cases if the unborn is not a human being. But if the unborn is a human being with the same right to life that you and I have, then we can't appeal to these difficult cases any more than we could appeal to, what about the woman, the single mom with a two-year-old who loses her job, no one's going to hire her, she doesn't know how to take care of her child, is her child going to end up in foster care, and, you know, she's in a difficult position trying to raise a toddler, and then she decides, well, why not just euthanize this toddler? Just as we wouldn't kill 1 or 2 year olds who live in extremely impoverished circumstances, we shouldn't kill the unborn just because they live in that same circumstance, if they're equally human beings. So I think the source of our disagreement is going to be over, quote unquote, the term, what is a living being? I would say that where you can live does not change how you ought to be treated. You know, people are you and I could not live in the womb. You know, it's an aqueous environment. So like maybe from the fetus's perspective, we're not people. A child can survive in the womb where we can't. We survive here where he can't. But just people live in different places. It doesn't change their value. So I'll let you have your last thought on that.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I mean, to be honest, I'll take the answer off air when I'm off. But I want to ask the question to, I always ask the question to people that are pro-life. It is, you know, what should the woman do when she's 16 and gets raped? You know, what is your thought about this? Should she raise the child as her own, even though she didn't want it and almost died by being raped, or should she give it up to foster care? Or and thank you for taking my call. I have these debates all the time with everybody. And
well, I'm glad you called in.
I need to hone up on my skills. So. Hey,
feel free to call back anytime. And then feel free to check out my book, Persuasive Pro-Life, as well, if you'd like to see a more extended treatment of the subject. So the question would be, what would be my advice for a teenager who is a victim of sexual assault who has become pregnant? And I've never had to actually give this advice in person to someone. In fact, my advice would probably be for them to talk to someone who actually is capable of helping them work through that situation, who's been there before, such as a volunteer at a pregnancy resource center, even one who had there are those I know who have worked at these centers who had become pregnant under less than ideal or criminal circumstances that could offer support and care for this young woman. But if I was to offer something, I would say that the bottom line is this for everyone who's involved. You don't respond to evil with more evil. Or I could put it this way. It's better to suffer evil than to inflict evil on other people. For example, let's say, you know, her rapist is caught. Maybe he goes to prison. Maybe not. Maybe he gets off. You know, he gets off, or he only goes to jail for a minimal amount of time. And she's terrified. And maybe her parents are upset and angry. And they conspire together. Let's kill this guy. Let's murder him ourselves. Maybe he will find that understandable. But at the same time, you would see that even that rapist has a right to life and can't be the victim of vigilante justice. And yet, if we agree, even in that extraordinary circumstance of this vile person should not be the subject of vigilante violence, then the child who is conceived in rape, the innocent child, should not be the victim of state-sanctioned violence against them in the womb. Rather, we should promote nonviolent solutions to the mother and child. And if we're concerned about the mother being traumatized by the crime that she has been afflicted with, I'd also be concerned about making her an accomplice to the death of her own child. How much more? There's one thing to have trauma from being the victim of violence. It's the other thing. It's something quite else to have trauma from being a afflictor of violence against other people. It's better to be a victim of violence than a perpetrator of it, because it is better to suffer evil than to do evil. I think that's even non-religious people can understand the virtue and wisdom like that. But I'm grateful you called and look forward to speaking to a lot of other people on this subject.
888-318-7884, the number. I'm going to let John go, and there's only one line. Well, John's gone now. There's only one line open, so give it a try if you'd like. We'd love talking with pro-choice people. We're grateful when you're willing to call and share your reasoning with us. We don't hide the fact that we are pro-life people and making pro-life arguments, but we think this is a conversation that should be had more and more, not less and less. 888-318-7884 is our number. Right now, we got the store-wide sale going on, and it's actually just for this month. So I think it's just for this month. Dozens of great resources available as part of our $5 and $10 book, CD, and DVD sale, including lots of great books and DVDs and CDs by the gentleman here with me right now, Trent Horn. You need to take action. Prices go back to normal at the end of this week, so it is for this month. Visit shop.catholic.com today and look for the $5 and $10 category. shop.catholic.com.
This is Archbishop Salvatore Cordiglione of San Francisco. Thank you for listening to Catholic Answers Live.
He is honored by the Church as a saint with the title of the Angelic Doctor.
Matthew Bunsen and the Doctors of the Church.
St. Thomas Aquinas wrote a basic textbook for young theology students that became the Church's most famous guide to the faith, the Summa Theologica. It helped him earn the title Doctor of the Church. He died in 1274.
For more about the Doctors of the Church, visit doctorsofthechurch.com.
Do you love praying for people? Have you ever wanted to use your gift of prayer to share Jesus with others and build up the body of Christ? Start a public prayer station with St. Paul Street Evangelization. Listen to people's needs, pray with them, or invite them to meet you at church. St. Paul Street Evangelization can help you get started. Find out how at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Our guest is Trent Horn, the author of Persuasive Pro-Life, among other books he wrote, Can a Catholic Be a Socialist?, that he wrote Answering Atheism, and he wrote Why We're Catholic, Our Reasons for Faith, Hope, and Love. And I was just trying to talk him into, before the show, he did not seem convinced. I think you should do a special Christmas edition where you write a little special Christmas introduction, and then people can give it away in their parishes for Christmas. And it should have like a manger scene on the cover.
Well, Why We're Catholic is available in bulk to give away. So if you go to shop.catholic.com to purchase Why We're Catholic, shop.catholic.com, Why We're Catholic, you can buy 20 of them for $60, $3 a book.
And give them away at Christmas.
You can give them away at Christmas. It will not have the fancy Christmas cover on it, but I think to create...
I'll write a special Christmas introduction to it for you.
As long as you write it in Old English and rhyme, I think
I'll have the letter E in places where it should not be, like O-L-D-E.
Oh, right? Oldie English.
Yeah, right. I'll do that. But I think it would make a great little, like, if it had the manger scene on the cover or
something. That would be prohibitively expensive to redesign the cover for a Christmas release. Perhaps
this
we could
is
buy
modern times. These okay, things can be done. You're,
right.
You're very negative.
Perhaps
you're very
what
negative.
We could do on the book.
No, I'm tired. I got to move on.
A sticker.
You're very negative.
A wreath sticker will slap. You could do that, Cy.
A wreath sticker.
We'll get hundreds
I'm talking
of
about
books.
Making a special Christmas invitation for people to become Catholic. Like, here's your why. All right, 888-318-7.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas in July.
Yeah, right.
888-318-7884. We're talking only to pro-choice people today, and we're very grateful that you call and have these conversations with us. Ross in Springfield, Missouri is next. He's listening on 91.9 FM. Ross, why are you pro-choice?
Hey guys. Well, let me start out by asking a question. So you mentioned that you're 100% pro-life, and you said something about the death penalty, I think, earlier. So personally, the two of you, or you individually, are you against or in favor of the death penalty?
Well, I would agree with the teaching of the Catechism of the Catholic Church that we ought to abolish the death penalty and seek non-lethal means to protect society from any criminal. So that's the position I will put out there.
I could definitely get on board with that. Now, let me ask, coming from this perspective, and I know it sounds like I'm doing a setup here, but I promise I'm not. What about someone like Ted Bundy, right? You take someone who maybe they, with medication, could be rehabilitated. Maybe they're not a lost cause, but you take someone like a Ted Bundy, a John Wayne Gacy, someone like that, who is remorseless and will not be rehabilitated and will certainly kill again. So prison, which serves the purpose of rehabilitation, for them would do no good. Now, in that situation, would you still consider yourself against the death penalty?
Well, I don't want to go down the road too much because I want to stick to abortion, but I would see incarceration as serving goods, both of rehabilitation as well as deterrence and protection of society. But to continue with your analogy, I agree with you that there are going to be cases where we are justified in killing human beings in order to protect the welfare of other human beings. For example, just war would be an example. Even wars where civilian casualties are indirectly brought about. However, I would disagree with the proposition that one should be allowed to directly kill an innocent human being to bring about goods. I believe that's an intrinsic evil one must never do.
So did you want to tell us why you're a pro-choice, Ross, or did you just want to talk? It's okay if you just want to talk about the death penalty, but I wondered if you wanted to tell us why you're pro-choice.
Yes, that's the next thing I was going to say. I just wanted to get the setup done first. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I'm working on a book right now called Necessary Evils. Mm-hmm. One of the tenets of it is the death penalty, one is war, one is abortion, and so on. Hmm. And my basic thesis is that there are things in our society that no one likes. I think we can all agree that, with very few exceptions, no one likes abortion. No one likes the idea of ending a potential human life. And I would put myself in that category. For many years was diehard pro-life and would not go any other way. But the thing is, as time went on, what I started to understand is it's not quite that simple, mm-hmm. right? It just like with war, just like with the death penalty, just like with many other things, it's not quite that simple. Mm-hmm. So you gave the analogy earlier, the previous caller, about what would you say the teenage girl who was raped? Well, let's say that this teenage girl is 11 or 12 years old,
sure.
or 10 even, mm-hmm. right?
Sure.
And she is violently raped by a family member, mm-hmm. right? At the age of 10 or 11, mm-hmm. you are not mentally or physically or emotionally ready for something like that, especially when it came about not sure. as your own choice, but a traumatic event, right? So in that instance, while I would not say that abortion is the only answer in that scenario, mm-hmm. right? I would certainly never go to that person and say, well, your only choice is abortion, make that happen. I would also mm-hmm. understand that if they / their parents felt like an abortion was the appropriate way to go, they should have the ability to do that. It is necessary because there are certain, just like with the death penalty, certain situations mm-hmm. that we need to employ, even though it's something we detest, we understand it may sometimes be a necessary evil.
Okay. Ross, I'm curious, do you have a publisher for your book, or are you still kind of working on it?
I'm still in the writing phase. I don't have a publisher yet, no.
Okay, I'm just curious on that. All right. Well, I believe that there's the category of necessary evil, I don't necessarily even oppose. For example, consider the case of sweatshops overseas. I would consider the case of less dignified working conditions for some people to be a necessary evil that could be tolerated because the alternative is worse. The situation is not intrinsically evil in itself. It's not ideal, certainly, but the alternative might be even worse conditions in another job or prostitution for children or things like that. But I would say children working in sweatshops might in some cases be a necessary evil to protect them from worse things. But I would say something like child prostitution is an intrinsic evil that we ought never to support in any circumstance whatsoever. So I would say that there are two kinds of evils, an intrinsic evil, something that you must never tolerate under any circumstance, and a necessary evil, which is something you might tolerate in some circumstances. So I agree with you. I would just say it would be where we would draw the line between the two. And I would say abortion falls in the intrinsic evil category. So for you, do you think that's a valid category, that there are some evils that are not necessary evils, they're intrinsic, we just must never tolerate them under any circumstance? Do you agree those kinds of evils could exist?
Yes, I absolutely do. And what I would say about a necessary evil mm-hmm. is, let's think about, we've agreed that, we don't like killing, regardless of whether it's in war or death penalty. Human beings do not like when other human beings die. We don't
sure.
like that, right?
Sure.
But we really need to, I think more of what I was getting at is that the question is not whether or not abortion is right or wrong, in my opinion. It is what is the purpose of it and what place does it occupy within our society. Does that make sense? I'm not a black and white person. I'm very much a let's look at, there are some conservative leaning people that will say I'm pro-life, I'm against abortion, but they will say with the exception of rape, incest, things like that. And to me, that is the most logical way to look at it, just because
Ross, let me jump in here. I would disagree with those categories because it sounds like you're taking a moral question and just looking at it through a practical lens instead of through a normative lens. Like, I don't think we would ever say, well, it's not a question of whether rape is right or wrong. It's a question of what is the purpose of rape and how does rape fit into our society? There are certainly practical effects from violence like rape, but I think we would start, before we looked at the practical question, we would look at the moral question, which would be, is rape right or wrong? And the answer is, it's wrong. And not just it's wrong, it's intrinsically wrong. It's never right. So for me, when it comes to abortion, I'm not a fan of the comparison with the death penalty or war, because the death penalty and war are not intrinsic evils. They're not things that you know, are always evil in and of themselves. There could be circumstances where they're justified to protect society from someone who is almost certainly going to kill again in rare circumstances. But killing innocent human beings. Before we have to move on, Ross, I guess I'll leave you with one point to think about. Are you concerned that if we justify killing some innocent human beings, like the unborn, for practical matters, there's no logical stopping point when it comes to tolerating killing innocent human beings for a greater good? As Yoda would say, to a dark path this line of reasoning will take us.
I would wholly disagree with that. And the reason is because that's a slippery slope. That's a logical fallacy to say that, well, if we allow abortion, where does it end? Just like when we said, well, if we allow two people of the same gender to marry one another, where does it end? We'll have people marrying goats and people marrying cars. Well, no, of course we won't. Of course we won't. Because the thing is, we understand, you know, if your baby is 8 3/4 months along, you want that baby, right? And nowhere on earth, as far as I'm aware, would let you abort that child.
You can't here in the United States.
Carry that child. You should have that option available to you. Is my only point, because it's what situation.
So you don't think this proposition, abortion should be legal through all 9 months for any reason. You don't support that.
Not at all. No.
Okay. So then, ultimately, it would come down to then you're going to pick a line and distinguish between what you would consider a necessary evil versus an intrinsic one. And I would just say that all innocent human beings prior to birth, regardless of the circumstances in which they were conceived, all bear that right. And there's no way to divide one class from another. They're all equally human. Your wanted, how you were conceived or whether your parents want you, would not change whether you have a right to life or not. But I'm grateful you called. We got a lot of other callers on the line. Maybe we'll hear from you in a future episode. But thanks for calling in.
Thanks, Ross. 888-318-7884, our number. Why are you pro-choice? I always am amazed, if I may just, before I go back to the next caller, I want to hit on one thing that Ross said. People who reject the slippery slope argument, like, oh, we all know the slippery slope argument's not true. Look at our society. We've been like...
I don't really understand, because what I was saying is I was not even making what is called a slippery slope argument.
No, right.
But I know what you mean. People will say, oh, that's a fallacy. And odds are it usually isn't. Rather, what I was asking for, because in logic and philosophy side, there is a technique called reductio ad absurdum, and that would be taking a position to its logical consequences. And if that is absurd, then there is something wrong with your position. So if the position is we can justify killing innocent human beings because it is of practical benefit to some people,
right?
There's no logical stopping point to that. And I feel like the people who have always said before, oh, ha ha ha, slippery slope is just a fallacy, they always end up backpedaling several years later, because now we have concerted efforts to make polyamory be legally recognized.
I can remember very recently in American public life, no one's arguing that we should change the definition of marriage. We're just saying we should get rid of anti-sodomy laws. It's when you say, well, if you do that, then you're opening up a door to it. No, we're not. And then those same people, I can even name some of them. They're politicians we all know very well.
Sure.
They made one argument, and 10 years later, they made a completely different argument. That's right. What the slippery slope is.
Right. It's the idea that there's no logical stopping point. Now, if you just put out a fear-mongering consequence that isn't logically connected to the current state of affairs, then you might have an unwarranted slippery slope argument. But if you're pointing out to the other person, look, here is your position. There's a difference between slippery slope and ad absurdum. Okay, so
yeah.
That you put forward an logically unrelated fear to the situation at hand. But ad absurdum is this is logically extended.
Yeah.
That if you say marriage is just the union of adults, if you just say you can kill human beings for any reason, it will entail this absurd situation. You either have to embrace the absurdity or reject your original illicit starting point.
And is there any serious adult who thinks, well, now that we've legalized this form of marriage, that polygamy is not next? Of course it's next. I bet you $43 right now that 10 years from now, polygamy will be legal somewhere in the U.S., and it'll probably be gaining steam around the world.
We'll keep that 43 bucks. 43 bucks aside.
43 bucks is on the
table.
Call me if you want to take up that bet.
10 years.
We all know what's going to happen. We all know how this game works. It slides and it slides and it slides. Hey, it's Why Are You Pro-Choice today? 888-318-7884. If you're on the line, please stay on the line. We'll only be gone a couple minutes, and we'll come back and take your calls. If you're not on the line, there's one line open, 888-318-7884.